Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is your instructor, Erica Evans, for Pharmacology and Dosage and Calculations. You guys are getting ready to take your finals in both courses. Real quick, for the final for Dosage and Calculations, what I would like for you guys to do is to go to dosagehelp.com. Again, that's dosagehelp.com. And I want you guys to do the practice questions under number 12 in the table of contents. I also would like for you guys to review sections 1, sections 5, and sections 10 of the table of contents. Section 1 is dosage question steps, section 5, IV terms and abbreviations, and section 10, dosage by weight. And then for the final, I would like for you guys to go through all the practice questions for that and send it to me in email question form with your answers. Also, for the final, you will do the complete chapter review for chapter 21, dealing with cardiac physiology and pathology. So, some key terms and things to remember in chapter 21 are angina pectoris, arteriosclerosis, coronary artery disease, congestive heart failure, conduction system, ECG, MI, myocardium, and SA. So those all have to do with the cardiac muscle. The heart is a muscle whose main function is to generate the force that moves the blood through the circulatory system. Occasionally, efficient cardiac function becomes impaired and results in a life-threatening situation. Fortunately, however, several classes of drugs are therapeutically useful in alleviating many cardiac conditions. To understand the action of the different classes of drugs that affect the heart, it is convenient to divide it into three functional parts: cardiac muscle, conduction system, and nerve supply. The cardiac muscle. The pumping ability of the heart is due to the arrangement of the heart muscle, or myocardium, into a system of four chambers. Contraction of the chambers increases pressure within the ventricles and forces the blood through a system of valves and into general circulation. And if you look at figure 21.1, that shows you the blood flow through the chambers of the heart. The blood supply to the myocardium is routed via the coronary arteries that branch off of the aorta immediately after the aorta leaves the heart. Under normal conditions, blood flow in the coronary arteries is dependent upon the force of the myocardial contractions. Any interference with the normal function of the myocardium or with the normal flow of blood to the myocardium results in a decreased capacity of the heart to contract. So, if there's any kind of damage to the heart muscle itself, the heart muscle will not be able to effectively pump blood through the body. Whenever there's damage to the heart muscle, that is called a myocardial infarction or heart attack. Okay? Conduction system. The conduction system of the heart is composed of a specialized type of muscle tissue that is located in specific areas of the heart. The conduction system is illustrated in figure 21.2. Conduction tissue has a unique characteristic known as autorhythmicity. This characteristic enables the heart to initiate its own electrical stimulation. Normally, an electrical impulse is generated within a sinoatrial or SA node. This impulse continues through the atrioventricular node into the common bundle of His, through the left and right bundle branches and Purkinje fibers. This movement results in contraction of the atria followed by contraction of the ventricles. Thus, the conduction system is responsible for coordinating the contractions of the heart chambers. So we're going to do let's do a video, of course, going over the blood flow, the pathway of blood flow through your heart. Now, remember we said that it has to go from the SA node to the AB node to the bundle of His through the left and right bundle branches into the Purkinje fibers. That is the normal, that's the normal rhythm or electrical sensation or impulse that the heart gives out. So let's listen to the pathway of blood flow.
Pour blood from your body returns to the right atrium of the heart. The pathway of blood flows through the heart. Oxygen pour blood from your body returns to the right atrium of the heart. Blood from your upper body returns through the superior vena cava. Blood from the lower body returns through the inferior vena cava. As the right atrium is filled with blood, it contracts. The tricuspid valve opens and blood is pumped into the right ventricle of your heart. When the right ventricle is full, the tricuspid valve closes to prevent blood from flowing back into the atrium. The right ventricle contracts, pulmonary valve opens, and blood is pumped into the pulmonary artery and to your lungs. The pulmonary valve closes to prevent blood from flowing back into the ventricle. Oxygen-rich blood from the lungs returns to the left atrium of the heart. As the left atrium is filled with blood, it contracts. The mitral valve opens and blood is pumped into the left ventricle of your heart. This occurs at the same time as the right atrium pumps blood into the right ventricle on the other side of the heart. As the left ventricle is full, the mitral valve closes, the aortic valve opens, the left ventricle contracts, and oxygen-rich blood is pumped into the aorta to reach all parts of your body. This happens at the same time as the right ventricle pumps blood into the pulmonary artery on the other side of the heart. The aortic valve quickly closes to prevent blood from flowing back to the heart. Meanwhile, the atria have filled with blood, and the cycle repeats itself.
All right, that was a nice, quick, short video on the blood flow through the heart. Now, you can take pictures of the heart through what is called an electrocardiogram. An electrocardiogram just kind of picks up the electrical tracings or impulses from the heart. So it monitors the heart's electrical activity. And you can look at this on a certain type of graph paper, and you can really determine if there's any damage to the heart. You can determine what part of the heart the damage is once you look at the EKG. So a recording of the electrical activity of the conduction system results in a characteristic waveform known as the electrocardiogram. The pattern of the electrocardiogram reflects the polarization, that is, when sodium ions entering the cell, and repolarization, which is potassium ions leaving the cell of cardiac tissue. Okay, so depolarization is when sodium ions go into the cell, and repolarization is when the potassium ions leave the cell of the cardiac tissue. Depolarization of the atria produces the P wave of the EKG or ECG. The PR interval is the time required for passage of an electrical impulse from the SA node through the AV node. Depolarization of the ventricles produce the QRS wave, and that is the AV node through the Purkinje fibers. Repolarization of the ventricles produces the ST segment and the T wave. A normal ECG can be found on page 234 in figure 21.2. So the third part is the nerve supply.
The heart receives its nerve supply from both divisions of the autonomic nervous system. Since the heart possesses the ability to initiate its own heartbeat, the function of the autonomic nervous system is to regulate the rate and the force of contraction of the heart. Sympathetic nerves release norepinephrine at the nerve endings, increasing heart rate, which is a positive gonadotropic action, and force of contraction, which is a positive inotropic action. Parasympathetic nerve release acetylcholine at the nerve endings, decreasing the heart rate, which is a negative gonadotropic action, and force of contraction, which is a negative inotropic action. Each division opposes the other, and depending upon the level of the body activity, one division adjusts its activity so that the homeostatic conditions are maintained. So a lot of these processes are controlled by the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and a lot of these processes dealing with the heart or cardiac function are involuntary, meaning that it can create its own impulse to contract the heart. So now let's see if we can find a conduction video for you guys to watch. Or to listen to, rather, I'm sorry. Because I really want you to understand how the impulses go from one to another. Okay, so we're going to listen to this video on cardiac conduction system, and it explains a little bit of how the EKG works. And you're going to learn that... when you're looking at EKGs, it takes a lot of practice to understand looking at EKGs because of the different waveforms. And the different waveforms can vary depending on what and how you place the leads. If the leads are not placed correctly, you'll have a hard time reading it. So listen to this video on the conduction system.
The sinoatrial node, or SA node, located in the right atrium near the entrance of the superior vena cava. This is the natural pacemaker of the heart. It initiates all heartbeat and determines heart rate. Electrical impulses from the SA node spread throughout both atria and stimulate them to contract. The atrioventricular node, or AV node, located on the other side of the right atrium near the AV valve. The AV node serves as electrical gateway to the ventricles. It delays the passage of electrical impulses to the ventricles. This delay is to ensure that the atria have ejected all the blood into the ventricles before the ventricles contract. The AV node receives signals from the SA node and passes them onto the atrioventricular bundle, AV bundle, or bundle of His. This bundle is then divided into right and left bundle branches, which conduct the impulses toward the apex of the heart. The signals are then passed onto Purkinje fibers, turning upward and spreading throughout the ventricular myocardium. Electrical activities of the heart can be recorded in the form of electrocardiogram, ECG, or EKG. An ECG is a composite recording of all the action potentials produced by the nodes and the cells of the myocardium. Each wave or segment of the ECG corresponds to a certain event of the cardiac electrical cycle. When the atria are full of blood, the SA node fires, electrical signals spread throughout the atria and cause them to depolarize. This is represented by the P wave on the ECG. Atrial contraction, or atrial systole, starts about 100 milliseconds after the P wave begins. The PQ segment represents the time the signals travel from the SA node to the AV node. The QRS complex marks the firing of the AV node and represents ventricular depolarization. Q wave corresponds to depolarization of the interventricular septum. R wave is produced by depolarization of the main mass of the ventricles. S wave represents the last phase of ventricular depolarization at the base of the heart. Atrial repolarization also occurs during this time, but the signal is obscured by the large QRS complex. The ST segment reflects the plateau in the myocardial action potential. This is when the ventricles contract and pump blood. The T wave represents ventricular repolarization immediately before ventricular relaxation, or ventricular diastole. The cycle repeats itself with every heartbeat.
All right, so that was a good video on the conduction of the cardiac muscle in the heart. I think sometimes watching these animations, you can kind of put the words into play. It's like putting names with faces. I really think it helps to reinforce the learning. So let's go on and talk about some main diseases of the heart. The two most common diseases affecting the heart are congestive heart failure, or CHF, and coronary artery disease, or CAD. In congestive heart failure, the contractile ability of the heart to pump blood is decreased so that the heart pumps out less blood than it receives. Blood accumulates inside the chambers, causing enlargement or dilation of the heart. Consequently, there is less blood circulating in the blood vessels to supply the body organs. The kidneys, particularly sensitive to a decrease in blood flow, respond by retaining more water and electrolytes, leading to fluid retention and general edema. When the left side of the heart fails, fluid accumulates in the lungs, causing pulmonary edema, and interferes with the gas exchange, resulting in shortness of breath. When the right side fails, fluid accumulates in the abdominal organs or ascites and lower extremities. Failure on one side of the heart is usually followed by failure of the other side, resulting in total heart failure. Congestive heart failure is treated with cardiac glycosides, diuretics, and a variety of vasodilator drugs. Coronary artery disease is a general term for several types of cardiac disease. An insufficient flow of blood flow through the coronary arteries to the heart is a common factor of all these diseases. The first one under coronary artery disease is arteriosclerosis. Arteriosclerosis is a disease of the aging process in which there is a hardening or fibrosis and narrowing of the arteries. These changes result in a decreased blood flow. One type of arteriosclerosis in which fatty deposits or plaques accumulate within the walls of the arteries is known as atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis. The coronary arteries are particularly prone to both conditions, and as stated earlier, any abnormal decrease in coronary blood flow decreases the function of the heart. Okay. You have angina pectoris. Angina pectoris refers to the clinical condition characterized by chest pain caused by insufficient coronary blood flow. Arteriosclerosis and atherosclerosis and coronary artery spasms appear to be the causes of angina pectoris. Attacks of angina, usually caused by physical exertion or psychological stress, are relieved by rest and a class of drugs known as vasodilators or anti-anginal drugs. Okay. Now we have myocardial infarction, which is known as a heart attack or MI. Heart attack myocardial infarction, or MI, is the leading cause of death in industrialized nations. When an area of the myocardium is deprived of its blood supply, and when an area is deprived of blood supply, it is called ischemia, the muscle cells of that tissue die. And when muscle cells die, or skin dies, organs die, it's called necrosis, resulting in an area of dead cells known as an infarct. Complete blockage or thrombosis of one of the coronary arteries is usually responsible for a MI. Large infarcts usually result in sudden death, whereas lesser infarcts undergo a healing process in which the dead muscle cells are replaced by connective scar tissue. Consequently, after an attack, the amount of contractile tissue of the heart is permanently reduced. Secondary complications commonly involve the development of congestive heart failure or disturbances of the conduction system, such as cardiac arrhythmias. Treatment for a myocardial infarction is aimed at allowing the heart to rest and undergo its normal healing process while treating any complications. Let's do one more short video on the heart. We're going to put how the heart works. And, okay, I'm going to listen to this very short video. Also, I want you guys to look at all the animations, okay? Because it really gives you a good picture of how the heart works. When you start to see patients, you're going to be able to begin to identify when it, like it was talking about right side versus left side heart failure. You, with the patient's symptoms, you'll be able to kind of determine which side of the heart is failing them. So assessment of your patients is a very critical process of determining heart function and heart disease. Now listen to this very short video, just one moment.
It lies behind and to the left of your breastbone. The heart is a muscle about the size of your fist. It lies behind and to the left of your breastbone or sternum. The purpose of the heart is to pump blood through blood vessels, arteries, and veins to all parts of your body. The inside of the heart is divided into four chambers. The top two chambers are called the atria and are collection chambers for blood. The bottom two chambers are called the ventricles, and the inside of the heart is divided into four chambers. The top two chambers are called the atria and are collection chambers for blood. The bottom two chambers are called the ventricles and receive the blood from the atria and pump it to the lungs and the body. The chambers are separated by valves, which control the direction of blood flow. There are four valves: tricuspid, pulmonic, mitral, and aortic. Circulation begins at the right side of the heart, where blood from the body comes to the right atrium. This blood passes to the right ventricle, where it is pumped to the lungs to receive oxygen. Once it receives oxygen, it flows to the left atrium, and then to the left ventricle, where it is pumped to the aorta and the rest of the body. On the right side of the heart, the tricuspid valve separates the right atrium and the right ventricle, allowing blood to enter the ventricle but not flow backwards to the atrium. Blood flows through the pulmonic valve to go to the lungs. On the left side of the heart, the mitral valve separates the left atrium and the left ventricle. Blood flows from the left ventricle to the aorta through the aortic valve and to the rest of the body. Arteries carry blood with oxygen and other nutrients throughout the body. Veins take blood back to the heart, which pumps it to the lungs to be oxygenated. The heart arteries, coronary arteries, provide oxygen and nutrients to the heart muscle. The right coronary artery supplies blood to the bottom and the back of the heart. The left coronary artery splits into two vessels. One branch supplies blood to the front of the heart. The other branch delivers blood to the left side of the heart. An electric system transmits signals throughout the heart to control its pumping. The electrical signal starts in the sinoatrial, or SA node, which is located in the upper portion of the right atrium and is known as the natural pacemaker of the heart. The electrical signal passes down to the lower chambers of the heart via the atrioventricular, or AV node, which controls the signal so the atria contract before the ventricles. In the ventricles, pathways carry the signal throughout the muscle so that they contract at the same time to pump blood to the lungs and through the body.
That's an excellent video. I will get this video to you in your email because it goes through the flow of the heart and the conduction system. So that's a very good email. I mean, I'm sorry, I keep saying email, YouTube video. Okay, so just to reiterate the things that we've talked about so far this year, you guys have done a very good job by getting through these pharmacology concepts. We've talked about the basics of pharmacology as far as what it is to study of. We talked about drugs and how drugs are made, how they are formed, and what they are used for. We've talked about drug mechanisms of actions. We've talked about adverse effects. We've talked about some safety components dealing with medications. We then got into the different parts of the central nervous system, the peripheral nervous system, and now the heart. It's going to be very important that you review these concepts. So when you get into practice and you're giving medications to your patients, you now have a solid background or a solid foundation to build upon in your clinical practice. You have a good foundation of what pharmacology is and why it is important in medicine. And also, you will be able to share this knowledge with your patients. So it's going to be very important that you take detailed medical histories in order to reconcile medications. That's one of the safety things that we talked about, making sure that we know everything that the patient is taking, whether it's prescription or whether it's over-the-counter or herbal. You always want to know what the patient is taking at home or what kind of home remedies they're doing, because sometimes they have an opposite effect or they have an adverse effect or interaction with prescribed medications. We also talked about how different tissues in the body have receptor sites. We've talked about how some medications can be agonist or antagonist. So they either produce an action or they block an action. We talked about the different categories of drugs. We talked about the different contraindications. Another thing we talked about is how we talked about drug calculations. And we talked about the certain factors or characteristics that can alter the dosage of medications and alter the effects or the outcomes of medications. We talked about some varying factors such as age. We talked about weight being a determining factor. We talked about sex being a determining factor. Mental state also being a determining factor on how drugs are metabolized in your body. We talked about some drug and drug interactions. So we actually covered a lot in this chapter. You will find that this book really does a good job at explaining the terms and picking out the important concepts to take forward with you. It is a challenge always to learn pharmacology and to know everything about every drug that is out there. But remember, we said you need to learn drugs by their classes. And you can remember one or two drugs of that class, and then you can pretty much, you know, have a good idea of what the remaining drugs in that class will do. So that has always been the best approach to learn pharmacology, is to learn drugs by their classes. Another way to do that is nomenclature, by looking at the prefixes or suffixes of drugs, such as pril would be your calcium blocker. You have the different glycosides or LOL, amines. Looking at the endings of the medications can help you put them into their proper class. So I want you guys to really take time to review Chapter 21, do the whole chapter review for the final, send that to me in an email. The flag word for today will be inhibit. Flag word for today will be inhibit. I will get the video to you in an email along with the assignments for the final. Hope you guys have a good Labor Day that's coming up. And until next time.